The death of God is about the drying up of a horizon of meaning and of a whole form of human life.
Where do we stand in the illusion it makes? What kind of space are we invited into?
The material relations between people become social relations between things. When we look at toasters, corn, and TVs,
to a large extent, live in the interregnum between worlds, if you will, or between paradigms. Not many people in the history of the world have faced that.
Zero Squared is the Zero Books podcast. Jordana Elizabeth is a musician, entertainment journalist, author, model, and the founder of the literary nonprofit Public/Private. And public is spelled with a K. Her writing has appeared on Vice, Nerve.com, SF Weekly, MTV Iggy, Ms. Magazine, and more. Her book, Don't Lose Track, Volume 1, contains 40 selected articles, essays, and Q&As, and is sort of a mixed tape version of a book. She's currently on her book tour. On February 8th, she'll be in New York, New York at the Blue Stockings Bookstore. Then on February 11th, she'll be in Baltimore at the Red Emma's Bookstore. Then on February 16th, she'll be in Seattle at the Left Banks Books Collective. Then on February 17th, she'll be in Portland, Oregon at the feminist bookstore In Other Words, which is also featured in Portlandia as the Women and Women First Bookstore. Then on February 19th, she'll be in San Francisco, California, at the Amnesia Bookstore. But let's not forget that she'll also be on TV. She'll be at the Stray Book TV Author Panel in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, on February 27th. Finally, back in Baltimore in March, she'll be part of the Maryland Department of Labor Brown Bag Lecture Series on March 17th. Today, it's Wednesday, February 3rd, 2015, and I'm Douglas Lane, the publisher of Zero Books and the host of this podcast. In this episode, you'll hear about the time I won the first place ribbon in a national mansplaining competition. You'll also hear the voice of Hunter S. Thompson, an excerpt from The Morning After Girls, excerpts from Tim and Eric, Bill Burr, Jordana Elizabeth's cello experiment, and a piano cover of Drake's Hotline Bling. Right now, you're hearing the theme song from Marc Maron's WTF, or What the Fuck, podcast, and we consider that a tip of the hat. But in just a moment, you'll be listening to Jordana and Elizabeth and I Lose Track. Jordana Elizabeth is a musician, an entertainment journalist, an author, a model, and the founder of the literary nonprofit Public/Private. Public is spelled with a K there. Her work has appeared on Vice, Nerve.com, SF Weekly, MTV Iggy, Ms. Magazine, and her first book with Zero Books is called Don't Lose Track, Volume 1. It's out now from Zero. So, Jordana Elizabeth, welcome to the Zero Squared podcast.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Your book is a bit more like a mixed tape than it is like an album.
Well, it's funny that you say that because I got my start kind of curating mixed tapes for music blogs and kind of fashion magazines and kind of bringing the bringing underground psychedelic music from Los Angeles and Austin and New York kind of to these glossier publications like The Wild magazine.
So, you know, when I wrote my first novel, I think I secretly was writing it for one of the people who ended up as a character in the book. There was a character named Guy Debord. He's this French artist and theorist, and he's a character in the book, and I think he's dead, unfortunately. But I secretly was thinking, will he like this, as I wrote about his days? So who would you think might be your inspiration or the kind of person you'd put this book in front of and say, oh, I hope this musician or artist or writer likes my book?
Oh, I'm a total Hunter S. Thompson freak. If you read my early writing, I would start everything with a prelude and I would tell the story about how I met this band or how I came to know them. And it was kind of like an homage to Gonzo immersion journalism. I like Camus. I like Tolstoy. When it comes to like super recent stuff, I don't really look around to compare myself, which is why I kind of have a unique music journalism voice.
Are you the Hunter S. Thompson of the psychedelic LA music scene?
Drugs didn't have much to do about it. I've been asked before, like, do you like psychedelic music? You write psychedelic music. You love Hunter S. Thompson. Do you like get high?
I didn't ask if you had been doing psychedelics. I just said, are you the Hunter S. Thompson of the psychedelic music scene? But it's interesting that that's how you interpreted it. Yeah, you're claiming you haven't done any drugs. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not claiming that. Okay. I'm just saying.
But I'd like to ask you why you use drugs.
Different drugs for different things. Right now, I think it's in my interest, in ours, perhaps. Maybe it's the greater good for me to smoke a joint and calm down. It's been demonstrably proven that temper tantrum is not the best way to do interviews, and probably my life would be easier than hers too if I took a joint. If I were to sit here in a fit of anger and some eating acid, sorry, I'd leave only a book. That cranks it up even worse.
My mom bought me a guitar at 13, and I was self-taught. But I've been putting out records. The last record was last July, like 6 months, you know, maybe less than a year ago. So
how many records have you made?
Probably about 11.
Oh,
and
wow.
I'll say
okay.
Under Jordana Elizabeth, we've probably done, I think there were three or four. We did our first debut LP. I almost died doing that album. It was really hard. And kind of learning how hard it was to be a musician. I think I decided to write a book. So I was like, I don't want to fucking do this. No, I'm kidding. I just like, I don't want to do this. It's really
yeah, right.
hard.
No, yeah. No, writing's easier. You just stay in your room. You don't have to go anywhere or talk to anybody.
Right. I'm so shy, you know, so it's hard for me. It's hard for me. Yeah.
But you're so shy, but you've been a performer and involved in the music scene and kind of putting yourself out there since you were 17 or 19, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't think you're that shy, Jordana, really. I mean, you got to be a paradox of a person.
I am a paradox because I'm like sitting around my apartment right now, like depressed and exhausted. Like, just like, I don't know what to do. You know, and I'm like, oh, my publisher is going to take me out to dinner tonight. And I'm like, sad about it, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You know, and you, so there is that paradox in my mind where it's like, I know that these are the best years of my life. I also, you know, when I get into a project and when I start promoting, I distance myself from friends and family, and I really kind of focus. So there is this paradox of. And when I'm on hiatus, I come, I get a boyfriend, we fight, we love, everything's happy, we do this, we do that. I'll get involved with my family, I'll do all this stuff, but when it's time to work, I have to really step back. So it is a paradox, and I'm not really, I'm glad you brought that up, because people don't get it. And they look at me like, what the fuck are you talking about?
In your book, you have this essay called, How Does It Feel? And you say something that's sort of provocative in there. You say a lot of different things, but one of the things you say is that you mentioned soulmates and finding out about people's real emotions by connecting online. Have you met any of your soulmates online?
I have an OkCupid. That shit don't work. Online, I've never even really deeply attempted online dating, but small attempts, they don't work. I am a very organic person. With that said, I will send a Facebook message to a friend or somebody I'm interested in, not just a lover, but maybe a girlfriend I met at a party. And I was like, oh, you know, I'll Facebook message him and say, would you like to hang out? Or if I find an editor or something, I will
you know, reach out. I'm in town. Let's have drinks. But have I made a profound connection via internet? No. I've been on the road for so long, you know. Let's put it this way. I am a entertainment journalist, and I know from the inside how people are treated when they don't draw their boundaries with the public. How about that? And, you know, we don't talk, we may get into it, but how I've moved on to dealing with very elite people and celebrities and, you know, and things like that. I've seen, you know, we watch Chris Brown, but we watch, you know, poor, you know, Bobby Brown go through, Bobby Christina die. We watch, you know what I'm saying? So some of my privacy is cautionary for sure. I've watched a lot of people up close and far away lose their lives because they didn't find their way to love people.
One of the things that's in here is some advice for younger writers. The one that I found really interesting that is never pitch to a writer. Do you get a lot of people pitching to you? Like trying to submit their work to you?
When I started writing for Vice. So yeah, I never pitched to a writer because all they're going to say is, oh, I'll pass this along, or you need to send this to this editor. It's a waste of the way I got my jobs was by going to the contact page. It's all there. The masthead is completely, they don't hide. It's not this exclusive. Yeah, sometimes it is, you know, Vanity Fair, like, you know, but like, you know, Jesus, you know, or go on Twitter. Everybody's on Twitter. Like nobody's hiding from you.
How do you do that? How do you make a contact and do a pitch over Twitter?
I follow them. And they follow me and we become fans of each other. I'm very patient, by the way. You know what I mean? It took me, if people were like, you know, you read my Wikipedia, it's like, oh, Jordana started her byline by getting into Vice, Bitch Magazine, and Nerve. Well, it took me 2 to 3 years to get actually into those publications.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And it took me actually 2 to 3 tries to get into Zero Books. Can I tell a funny story? Can I tell a funny story about Zero?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I knew that you guys were going to take Don't Lose Track because I had written this chunk of this really weird existential story that was really, nobody liked it except for you guys, actually. So I might send it to you again because it's done. Mm-hmm. But, yeah. But I, you know, and it got rejected because it wasn't finished. And I was like, well, you know, and this is how you have to think. I said, well, if they like something that far out, then something as kind of simple as my articles may work. Very small thought, like nothing big. I had a plan of compiling my stories together anyway. And it was Mr. John Hunt. So thank you, Mr. John Hunt, who was actually like, this is quirky. This is awesome. who got it. Everybody else is on the fence, like, I don't know, but thank you. I wanted to say that, you know, he's like, I get it, you know? So, I got rejected fully the first time, rejected halfway the second time, and the third time. So that's what people don't get. You know, it's like, oh, she's young. She gets everything she wants. No, fuck no. I get rejected so much. Here's another interesting story about the gentrification piece that opened the book.
Yeah.
It was slated for Playboy, mag.com.
Oh, yeah?
And it was slated for Playboy, and I took it back because the editor was just like, yeah, well, maybe I'll put it out in 4 to 6 weeks. That's my editor voice right there. maybe I'll put it out in... you know, in 2 years or something.
Hey,
you
know? I noticed your editor voice is a white guy voice. I just noticed that. But anyway, go
ahead. And most of my editors are women. It's just, I don't know. Because
maybe we'll do that in a couple of weeks. I don't know. I'm going to have a martini. Go ahead.
Yeah, and forgive me, white male editors. I don't think I've ever had a long, I'm sorry. I don't think I've ever had a long working relationship with the male editor before, white or otherwise. Usually they're women. I don't know what it is. I think it's a different way of communication, because my female editors and I, we send the XOs and and the smiley faces, and we're expressive and things like that. I think male editors are very analytical.
Well, tell me what happened at Playboy. Tell me about what these guys at Playboy did. This martini swilling editor.
No disrespect. I think, you know, and Joe was actually very gentlemanly and respectful to me. He answered all my emails. He answered my questions, and he was very helpful. So I'm going to, I have no, my direct editor was somewhat innocent in the entire situation. It just took too long. And I looked around me. First of all, you know, Playboy. So it's going to be a little sexist. And I'm not mad at that. I made the choice to.
Yeah.
They pay
big money, Playboy.
They offered me a lot. They offered me a lot. Not as much as I think other writers were getting, I'll be honest with you, but it was a lot for a starting pay. And I will not tell you what that is because I'm a lady.
And was that going to turn into a regular gig? Were you going to become like a columnist or a blogger there?
I wanted it to, which is why I was upset with the length. And there was another, I was looking around and there were other writers that were writing very frequently. And writers that were similar to me that were writing very frequently who were men. So that's what made me uncomfortable, because I watch. I don't just live in my own little world. I read, I watch, I pay attention.
You get a good opportunity like writing for Playboy, say. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. That can always just turn around. Like I had something similar with Truth Dig. I wrote a piece for Truth Dig.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know that publication?
Yeah.
It's kind of a left wing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the guy came to me and said, I like what you said in this panel, and I think that I like your podcast, and I look like you're writing, and you should write for me. I want you to be, like, a writer for me. Like, not just write a piece, but I want to publish your work consistently. And then it took so long for that first piece to come out and was edited so many different ways that I realized it was going to be impossible for me to write. Somehow what it started as him saying, oh, I want you to write for me, had turned into me begging him to get the piece out.
Jordana don't beg. I just took it back. So that was another thing. I was rushed into putting it together, and then the lag came. And then on top of that, there was some controversy about the content. One writer who used to be a friend, but he's kind of gets in trouble being this man writing feminist work. I'm not going to put out the name, but he wrote this piece about how 18-year-old sex cam girls, their job should be normalized. And I was like, that's fucking gross. And then there was another piece that came out that said how the N-word, how when it's appropriate to use the N-word. I said, okay. So those two people came out at the same time. You know, teenage sex cam girls are okay, and when it's the right time to use the N-word. And I said, all right, yeah, those two pieces came.
So when did they say it was okay to use the N-word? When you're on a sex cam, maybe, or what was the time?
There was a pictograph, and it's got to be up. It's got to be on there. There was a pictograph. Apparently, the deputy editor, his son, they were driving along. His son was playing the Jay-Z song Niggers in Paris. Niggas in Paris. I've never heard it. I like Jay-Z. I'm not hating on Jay-Z, but I've never heard that track. And so the dad, and I get the people, you know, he's playing himself. He pulled the car over, you know, and he had to talk to his son and be like, look, man, you know, what's going on? So then there's this huge pictograph about when it's right to use the N-word. And, you know, he should have slapped his son. You know, don't slap your children. I'm not saying I don't condone that. But, you know, he should have just said, don't ever use that word. It's not okay. JD used it. That's fine. You know, but you're not a rapper. Blah, 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 blah. But he mansplained this whole situation. So the mansplaining of the 18-year-old sex cam girls and the mansplaining of the N-word, I was just kind of like, whoa, you guys.
That doesn't even burn a bridge. You can just retract a piece. That's not even burning a bridge, really.
Right. I don't feel that I burned a bridge. I was pretty upset. about the two other articles, but retracting the piece that had nothing to do with that other situation. But that is the reason why I'm not a consistent writer, because I know how to pay my dues. I know how to work things up. I know I'm brown skin. I know I'm a woman, blah, blah, blah. And there are things that I have to work for. But I just felt personally that it just wasn't the right publication for me.
I do want to say that I want to warn you that I have a trophy in mansplaining. I've won awards. I am like a professional mansplainer. So, you know, beware. Watch out for that. It may happen. So that's all I'll say about that.
I like strong guys.
Mansplaining's hilarious. Just for the record, ladies, they do it to us too. There's always that fucking person. You know that person? It's usually a person who's either they're not educated or they're overly impressed with their education. Like someone who didn't go to college is always trying to constantly throw out some information about something that they're well read on, that they read, you know, to overcompensate for the fact that they didn't fucking throw $100,000 into the goddamn toilet going away to school. Or you get those people that, you know, I went to undergrad here and then I matriculated over to fucking blah, blah, blah for my graduate and my baccalaureate.
The universe. What a concept. You know, the universe is a little bit like the human hand. For example, you have Grauman's center right here, and then you have Undiscovered Worlds and Sector 8. And up here, it's the Tillman's Crest. So you can kind of picture that it's a little bit like a leaf or it's not a bowl.
The universe is beautiful. Something like a new woman that I was going to date. You're dark and you're massive and you have a black hole. And all of those elements I want to explore, just like you would explore on a new date. You want to dive deep into them and feel around and just see what's going to come out of that. The time it takes to get from one star to another star is instant. You need to travel at the speed of light. And us humans can't even fathom the concept of that kind of time because it's really, 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 really fun to think about taking a speed of light ride.
Like, how do you think of your job in an interview? Because for me, I feel like my job in an interview often enough is to let people have their say their piece, but not to let people say their piece without a response. Like, I have to push back a little bit in interviews to keep the ball rolling. And I can't, but I don't want to end up, you know, some interviews get really adversarial and people are arguing. And even with people I disagree with strongly, I don't tend to try to push things to a head and get into an argument. I just try to gently kind of push back a bit. How do you handle that?
No adversarial at all. But here's a really great example. Dustin Hill of the band Black Pussy. Man, a lot of people were really mad about that band. Because I'm in the scene, I'm in the psychedelic rock and roll scene. I had heard about the band right when they came out 5 years before, and I was in a club, and some white guy walked up to me like, "Have you ever heard of the band Black Pussy?" And I was just like, "No," and I just kept going. I just kept moving.
So you know, I just tried to Google that band because I hadn't heard of them before. And
yeah, you got to put Black Pussy band.
Got something else there. All right. So anyway.
Which is sort of the point of why I went. So I looked at the internet, I looked at their website, and I decided at that moment to ignore them. And I ignored them for about 5 years until a couple of feminist women who I respected came out. They were from my hometown of Baltimore. Two Black female feminists came out. And I said, okay. I hate when people get ganged up on. I don't care if you're right or wrong. And I felt like the feminist community was really drilling on this guy and not talking to him and judging him. And he was getting all these interviews with these white metal journalists, and they were all sitting there mansplaining and lying. I said, okay, this is crazy. So I messaged him and I found his publicist and I called him up on the telephone. Like, I don't know why no other feminist journalist would just like, didn't think to call him.
So how did that work out? What did he say to you?
We had a preliminary off the record conversation to make sure he wasn't crazy. Cause I've talked about how I renege. I don't waste my time. I write for like 5 to 7 publications at a time. I have part-time jobs. I have family. I have stuff. So it's like, okay, this guy's loopy. Then I'm not going to waste my time. But he was pretty articulate and intelligent. So we went at it, and it came out. Brooklyn Rail Literary Blog actually picked it up. Literary Magazine, excuse me, which is very fancy, which I'm very stoked on that. I had to renege it from Bitch Magazine. Bitch Magazine, I love you so much. I love you. They are the queens of my life, the best editorial set ever. But I took the story from back because there was this woman's lens on it, and I didn't want that. I didn't want woman-splaining on it. I didn't want mansplaining on it or anything. I just wanted Dustin to be Dustin, and that's my goal.
What was his reason for naming the band Black Pussy? Can you say that, or do we have to read the interview?
You have to read the you guys read the interview. Did I not? It might have come out after this book. So I'm telling you, we got to do a follow up. But you might have to read the interview. But he never had a problem until he started getting bigger. And black females in the South and stuff like that, they loved it. They thought it was funny. And he told the story about how he did this show right before a hip hop night in Portland. He's from Portland, by the way. You should go. Maybe he'll come to the event. I'll email him. And they were looking at him like, are you fucking crazy? But, he explains himself and he's charming. And again, I will say this. I don't like the name. I do believe he's misogynist. But that wouldn't stop me from having a beer with him because, you can't.
Do you think he named his band Black Pussy because he's a misogynist, or did you decide he was a misogynist for some other reason? Or was that the main bit that made you think, oh yeah, this guy's a misogynist?
Read the interview. I'll let you, I'm going to let you.
I had a friend in the 90s who started a band called the Meat Cigars.
And,
yeah. And they had songs like Mr. Squiggly. But
see, that goes over my head, the Mr. Squiggly. Please, I'm a little naive, so please don't burst
all right, I won't. I won't. I will not. Explain it to you. But it seems like there's a part of pop culture and part of rock bands and things that they're trying to kind of be provocative and sexual and be noticed. And so calling yourself the Meat Cigars, that's memorable. Calling yourself Black Pussy is memorable. May not be wise, but
it keeps people from listening to the music, I think.
Yeah.
How is
the music?
It's okay. It's neo psychedelic and again, like, he's in my circle. I've heard of the band's name. We know we have mutual friends. I think he's an okay guy. But getting to the answer of how I deal with interviews, I am unbiased. And I've had women come to me about this specific interview and be like, I wouldn't be able to do that. How could you talk to that guy and be killed? And I'm just like, well, because he's a human fucking being and I tolerate people. And also, we as Americans like to act like our shit doesn't stink and we don't have all this stuff in the closet. We've done it. We've said. And if we're at a table with our friends and we've never said a sexist joke or that we've never said a racist joke in jest in our private world. I also grew up around white men. They've put roofs over my head. They've taken care of me. They've been great friends. And I've never been called the N-word in my life until maybe like last week, you know, by some crazy homeless guy. You know what I mean? So I believe that the universe crafted me to be a good professional and to be a good journalist, because I don't have, I am a civil rights advocate. Shit is wrong. We live in a racist ass country, but I think the universe crafted me and made me connect with white males. Because if you can talk, and you may, this is a little, probably annoy you a little bit, but if you can talk to a white man, you can talk to anybody. I don't know how you feel about that.
If you're a white man and you can talk to a white man, does not mean that you can talk to anybody.
And I guess, and maybe I should say that from the perspective of a minority,
right.
and not just if you can talk to a white man, but if you can pull down your guard, you know, and white women and white, because I'm not racist. I'm just not. People are annoying. We live in a racist, systemic, crazy, sexist, patriarchal country and culture, but I love all people. I don't get it. You know what I'm saying? So
you got some pushback. It sounds like to me you got some serious pushback for having even talked to this guy, Dustin Hill, right? That's his name.
Yeah, a little bit. Definitely a little bit. But again, you don't get a book deal by being afraid. And I don't continue to work by, I'm not afraid to say I would have a beer with Dustin Hill.
Oh yeah.
You know,
I went to the Brooklyn Rail. I'm looking at it. He's saying things like he really doesn't want to be racist here or sexist.
He doesn't come off crazy, which made a lot of feminists a little upset. He doesn't come off like an asshole. He a little bit, because how can you not be a little bit of an asshole naming your band Black Pussy?
It's hard for anyone not to be a little bit of an asshole. I think we're all a little bit of an asshole.
But, you know, let's also give Dustin respect for, first of all, being open to speak with me, for being respectful towards me. You know, it goes both ways. He could have just been like, fuck no, I'm not going to talk to you. Now, of course, he said some jerky things like, yeah, oh, it's free publicity. Oh, yeah, blah, blah, blah. Just trying to be tough. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, you know, in our preliminary conversation, he really opened up, and I will never share. I do know the reason why he named his band Black Pussy, but it's private and it's not on the record.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. Well, I won't ask you to, but that's really interesting.
No,
so,
but if you come to the book event and I'll tell you, but I'm not.
All right, I'll tell you. Yeah, I'd like to know. I'll definitely come to the book event and we'll, I'll try to remember
Dustin
to ask
will
you.
Come. Maybe we'll have a beer with Dustin. We'll see you if
you'll
come.
Cool. I'd like that. But do you want to be famous? Honestly, though, you're a musician. You're in a field that kind of runs on fame and celebrity a lot. And you're obviously ambitious. So would you like to be famous?
Fame is going to be a result if I continue to do this. But, you know, Janet Jackson yeah, I'm not comparing myself to Janet Jackson. I look like, my face looks like her when she was 8 years old. I can tell you that. but, you know, she's, you know, been able to do that. And you know, Tyra Banks, I think, just had a surrogate mom, and they were able to deal with that. Like, even when celebrities go on TV and say, I can't have a baby, not everybody catches on that. They'll go on maybe a couple of TV shows, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not talking about my fertility, but I'm talking about privacy. Like, just because you want to be famous doesn't mean everybody's going to know where the fuck you live. Does that make sense?
If you're really famous, you don't want anybody to know where you live. Really, hardly. Think about that lady who moved into David Letterman's house and said she was his wife. You know, it's like,
right,
anybody might show up if you know, the John Lennon had people knocking on his doors thinking he was going to, you know, redeem their souls.
Well, in front of his apartment on 72nd, and, you know.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, you know, but then there's that article that talks about how David Bowie would just walk down the street in New York and nobody would. So it is, it's your vibe. It's how you draw your boundaries. You know, there's a man in my life who we actually just kind of separated, honestly. But it's just because, we talk about my public life and all of these things. And it's a very, it's a thing that I have to be aware of. I usually choose partners who, A, don't give a shit. B, don't have social media. I've had a lot of partners go insane over seeing all the shit that blows up on my social media.
So what, are you dating guys in their 60s? They don't have social media.
40s? What are you? There are people in this world who do not have faith, but I actually know a number of people. So
I don't want to talk to them. I don't want to talk to any of these people who don't have Twitter.
That's cool. I'm glad that you're honest about that.
I'm joking. I'm kidding.
The people in my life who are real and who know my address challenge the hell out of me. And they're real and they're raw and they're not fucking on my... I've had family members be like, but you said this on your Facebook. Like, I'm standing right here in front of you. Connect with me right in this moment. So the people that I choose that are really close in my life are present in this moment. The people that I live with now, I mean, they're chill about, like, I just did this big webcast show with some A-list actress who I love. Sorry, not some, excuse me, Anna Lynn McCord. Very powerful lady. And you know, I just like, oh, how did it go? You know, and I'm nervous. Like, you want a shot? You know what I mean? There's no, like, that's what I look for. I look for very, like, and you can't hide that. I think when you have friends and people around you who don't try to be down to earth, but you can tell that they, like, want to give you their demo or something, you know, you can't fake that. You know what I mean? So, the last man in my life, he was just raw and gonzo. Very Hunter S. Thompson, like, no social media. Very amazing.
Was he Hunter S. Thompson's age?
Yeah, well, you know, we would sit around and watch the Rockford Files and the Love Boat and old Barbra Streisand movies. That's why I'm a pop culture writer, because if you read the foreword of the book, it talks about my father and my mother, you know, and how they're just these very quirky, you know, people. But, like, I love pop culture from the 1960s to the 1990s. That's why I'm an entertainment writer. I will never write about Drake. It's not going to happen. Maybe I've covered him once, but it was like a crime. It was like a piece about how the NYPD or LAPD were tracking rappers on a crime force, new crime. Anyway, I'll never write about, you know, unless there's a young kid who's really different. I think I talked to Shamir, who's 21, but I compared him to Stevie Wonder. Like, it's just, but that's why my shit is timeless. And I hope I don't sound arrogant by saying that, but
no,
I can connect.
Go ahead. Yeah.
I can connect with all types of people, but you know, he and I got along because we love the same music. We love P-Funk and Alice Coltrane, and we love, you know, you know, Frank Zappa and all of those things. And yes, we would sit around and go see Woody Allen movies, but that's just...
So, do you miss him?
You know.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry.
He's like down the street. Yeah, I do.
Well, maybe this book tour will keep your mind off him, huh?
Well, I think a big reason why I disconnected was because I didn't want to be sad on my book tour. And I think I'm a bit, because I was depressed. We were just kind of on a break, and it was just, and I was just depressed, and I was just like, hey, you know, this is the best time of my life. You know what I mean? I don't want to be on a book tour with a broken heart. And so I, you know, so that's not going to, I'm not going to be broken hearted. Yeah. I think you can love someone and miss them and not be like devastated. So that's why I miss him, love him, but I'm not devastated, which is okay, right? That's cool.